Is there any questions?
Just a couple of minutes before we have question answer session. So we have a long list of many wonderful dignitaries who are assembled here. So I would like to welcome all the special guests who are present today. First of all, I would like to welcome Mr. Radhesham Pandey, who is a Sanskrit professor in Somaya College. Could stand up, please? Yes. Dr. Chikalkar, who is a warden in JJ Hostel. Mr. Raj Kilnani, who is a Deputy Commandant, General Home Guard, IPS, Special IG and Deputy Director of Civil Defense, Maharashtra State. Dr. Zenith Ali, who is a Trustee of Women's Movement for Peace and Prosperity, WMPP. She is an Islamic scholar. She's out? Okay. And also professor in Xavier's College, lectures globally. Yeah, she's there, right there at the door. She lectures globally on communal harmony and conflict resolution. We have Mr. Ram Maheshwari, who is a branch head of the Times Group, managing trustee for WMPP, and he has taken initiative for heading the panel on value, education, spirituality, women empowerment and health. We have Ms. Prema Iyer, who is a trustee for Women's Movement for Peace and Prosperity, initiating all panels in WMPP. We have Mr. Ajay Anand, who is a very good friend of ours, export-import businessman in textiles. Shishirada Gopinath ji ki. We have Ms. Mallika Oberoi. She is a social activist working in Colaba slums and dealing with actual problems of slum children. We have Mr. Ashok Parekh, who is a share broker at Mumbai Stock Exchange with J.J. Shah and Company, who has done his MBA Finance from Narsimhanji Institute. We have Mrs. Shakun Narayan, founder trustee of Women's Movement for Peace and Prosperity under the umbrella of Times Foundation, leading the spiritual desk. We have Mr. Dayanand Shetty, who is an electronics engineer and industrialist and who has trained his whole family in Krishna consciousness. We have Dr. Naina Athale, professor at Sophia College, heading health table of Women's Movement for Peace and Prosperity. We have Mr. Ashok Bharati, who is a country head for Inmarsat Satellite Communication Limited, New Delhi. He is a B.Tech. Honours in Electronics and Communication from NIT Kurukshetra. We have Mr. Kaushal Kishore, Divisional Railway Manager, Mumbai Central Western Railway. We have Dr. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu, who is an Ayurvedic Vachaspati, who is a PhD in Psychiatry, a Master's in Ayurveda, in charge of the Ayurveda Department in Chaitanya Ayurvedic Research Institute. We have Dr. K.K. Sudevan, who is Principal, Terna Engineering College, who is an M.Tech from IIT Chennai and PhD from IIT Mumbai. And we have Dr. N.D. Desai, who just left. So we would like to welcome all of these special guests to our program. They have taken out time from their very hectic schedules, so we are very grateful to them. So let us express our gratitude by loudly chanting. Also, we have the second issue of the Resonance magazine. We have this monthly newsletter which details all our activities for the last month, some nice features, articles, tips for students. So these will be available below for sale. Every month we bring out only 500 copies, and today there are 700 people. So make sure that you get your copy. I would request His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj to release this second issue of Resonance magazine. Haribo. Also, before we start our question answers, two very important announcements. On Friday morning, His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj will be giving Srimad Bhagavatam class in the morning at Sri Sri Radha Ras Bihari Mandir at Juhu. That is the first day of Kartik month. So he'll be speaking on the Damodar Leela and also leading the Damodar Ashtak at Sri Sri Radha, Radha Ras Bihari Mandir at Juhu. In the evening, that is Friday 10th, there will be a special festival called the Sharad Purnima, where there will be the most beautiful darshan of the whole year of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Mandir, and that festival will begin in the evening at 6 p.m. Lecture will be given by His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj, and then after that there will be special darshan and kirtans. So we request all the devotees to kindly be present for these programs and take the maximum association of His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj. So now we may have some questions from the students and the guests. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, you're telling about a conflict in materialistic people, but there are conflicts in religionists also. And in religionists also, those who follow religion, they are also sometimes found unsettled, sense control, they cannot control their senses. So there is conflict in their mind also. So what to answer about this question, like religionists having conflict in themselves?
Very much so. Religious conflict is one of the most horrible aspects of our human history. Hatred, sectarianism, on the basis of differences in belief. The problem is, as we explained, either partial understanding or the false ego manipulating for its own purpose under the guise of religion. It is very dangerous, and it has destroyed people's faith throughout the ages. The greatest blow to true religion is hypocrisy and sectarianism. Our Guru Maharaj explained that philosophy without religion or devotional faith is simply mental speculation. Religion or devotional faith without philosophy is generally either sentimentalism or fanaticism. The harmony of philosophy and religion . Our beloved Guru Maharaj would explain it as the science of self-realization. Sanatan Dharma, which is actually the name of the religion of the Vedas, Dharma means one's nature. The Dharma of sugar is that it is sweet. The dharma of a chili pepper is that it is hot. The dharma of water is liquid. If you put the water in an artificial condition, it becomes solid. But as soon as it's in a natural environment, it's liquid. That innate nature that is the essence of a thing is its dharma. It is the dharma of every living being to serve. We cannot live without serving. We're either serving our leaders, or our leaders have to serve us. We're serving our families, we're serving our employers, we're serving our employees, we're serving our mind, we're serving our senses. We're paying taxes, serving the government. We cannot live without service. Sanatana means eternal. Our eternal nature is to serve God with love. That is our nature. That is religion. When we have a philosophical understanding, we use the example of 2 + 2 = 4. In this sense, it's like 100. There's not just a few ways to approach. There's many today. 99 + 1 = 100. 51 + 49 = 100. People could fight about who's right. But if one understands actually what 100 really is, then he understands all proper ways of approaching. But you also have to understand all the improper ways of approaching. 51 + 75 = 100. It's not that all roads lead to 100. There's infinite roads that do not lead to 100. Yes? 10 million times 8 billion does not lead to 100. So there's infinite ways of not ever getting to 100. But there are many ways of getting to 100. 97 + 3. You could reach 100. So there are authorized processes that bring us to God. And those are the great religions of the world. Not just what anybody invents or concocts or says, I am God, follow me. We must understand what is and what isn't. But when we understand in a scientific, without ego, Jesus said you can judge a tree by its fruit. You can judge a spiritual person by the qualities they live by the ideals that they're willing to give their life for. A religious person is willing to make sacrifice to be honest, to be pure and moral in character, to maintain his love, his faith, and his compassion, or hers. Wherever we find these qualities, Titikshava Karuna Kasura Dasaravadehyanam Ajata Satravasanta Sarava Sadhu Bhushanam. These are the qualities of a saintly person. Whether one is a Christian or a Jew or a Hindu or a Muslim or a Zoroastrian or a Jain, let us see what is the qualities of a saintly person. Who has those qualities? Compassionate and merciful to others. Self-controlled. Not a victim of the mind and senses, but the controller of the mind and the senses. Forgiveness. A friend and well-wisher to all living beings. Tolerance. Faith and devotion. These are the qualities of a spiritual person. Where we find these qualities, we find religion. Where we find hatred, vengefulness, terrorism, that has nothing to do with real religion. It's simply hypocrisy. It's politics and ego. Putting on the cloak of religion. If your so-called faith in God causes you to hate his children because they don't act or dress like you, that's not love. If I love my father, I'll love him whether he's in his pajamas, or whether he's in a tuxedo, or whether he's in a dhoti and kurta. Yes? A dog will love his master, however he's dressed. But if we can't love our God, if he's approached in a different way by someone else, that means our love is less than the dog. It's not love. No, there is no real fighting amongst religions. There's fighting amongst people who pursue the fulfillment of their false egos in the name of religion. And that is something that has always been in our history, and perhaps in this world it always will be. But the question is, who are we going to be? Individually and collectively, what do we want to generate in our life? We are all transmitters. You're an antenna, and you're absorbing vibrations, yes? But then according to what you absorb, you must transmit through your words, through your actions. If we tune in to the right channel and absorb the vibration of these qualities, which will induce and encourage these divine qualities, then naturally we will transmit them. And those who we come in contact with, we will give them hope. We will give them faith. We will give them joy and love. And spiritual transmitters don't discriminate who is fit and who is unfit. True spiritual transmitters are giving that energy out freely. But it is according to the person's antenna, what station he's tuned into, whether he can receive your transmitting. But the greatest service is by your qualities to actually charm people's hearts, to convince them to turn to the right channel in their life. Does that answer your question?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Right from the childhood, we have been taught there is a God in everyone. Is it?
Can you say again, please?
Yeah, sure. Right from the childhood, we have been taught there is a God in everyone. Is it? And why we approach people with different? A different sense. Why we approach people differently if there is a God in everyone?
God is in the tiger. And God is also in the cobra. So you should respect God in the cobra and in the tiger. But you're going to approach them differently than your mother or your father. At least I hope so. So discrimination is the better part of valor. Discrimination must be there. But compassion and respect should also be there. Every living being is not God. Every living being is part of God. like the sun and the sun ray. The sun ray is qualitatively one with the sun. It is part of the sun. The spark is part of the fire. It is a small fragment of the fire. So every living being is a reflection in part and parcel of God. Just like the Son is part and parcel of the Father. Yes? The difference is we could never grow up to be God. But if you love God, you must love every part, which means wherever there is life, the presence of God is there. We love a person that's diseased. We may hate the disease, but we don't hate the diseased. The disease is ego, pride, arrogance, which creates lust and envy and anger and greed and illusion. And those qualities, when they plague the heart like a disease, the symptoms are cruelty, selfishness, pollution. That is the problem. So we must learn how to express our love according to the time, the place, the circumstance, and the person in a way that's beneficial and safe to some extent. Lord Chaitanya was embracing tigers. They were dancing with him. But we are not Lord Chaitanya. So when we see the tiger, we should pray for them. Perhaps silent prayer also. Is there another question?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Yes.
Sir, I'm not very learned. This is the first year I joined King CGS Medical College.
Can you put the microphone close?
This is the first year, sir, I joined this CGS Medical College and KM Hospital. So my question is, whenever in front of God we stand, let it be Durga, Shiv, let it be in a mosque, Gurudwara, everyone closes his eyes. Even in front of Krishna when we stand, we close our eyes. What I feel, when we close our eyes, we are not looking at that God. We are not looking at that idol. We are looking at something, energy. My thinking, till now, this is the value, this is the philosophy I have, this always been in conflicting in my mind that whether I'm right or wrong. Because I have a very strong belief that when we close our eyes, we are not connecting ourselves to that idol. We are connecting ourselves to our energy. Energy which is everyone, which is around us every time. I just want to know from you whether my thinking in this way is right or wrong. Thank you.
There are various levels of realization of the Absolute Truth. In a very general way, I will respond to your question. There is connecting to the energy, but a more complete connection is to the energetic source. When we close our eyes, I do not know exactly what you are experiencing, but to connect with the energy of God brings about a state of peace to the degree we're actually connected, not on the mental platform, but actually on the spiritual platform. But we should know the real connection comes through the purification of the heart. It's not just an imagination. A mental connection, which may give some peace of mind, is nothing more than some peace of mind which is on the mental platform. It's temporary. When you open your eyes, the peace is gone, at least after some time. But when spirituality is the purification of the heart, so we can actually connect to that eternal spiritual energy, not just the various subtle and gross physical energies, which includes the mind. The purpose in the Vedic religions of the deity is the deity is the manifestation of the personality of Godhead. That is what the deity of Ram or Vishnu or Krishna is. And there are also deities of various energies of the Lord, like Durga or Kali. That is what our scriptures say. They are the energies of the Lord. But the energetic source, the Shaktiman, is the source of all energies. And when we actually understand, you know, what the deity, who the deity is, and we approach the deity with genuine faith and devotion, whether we picture in our hearts or whether we picture with our eyes, the real progress spiritually is how we're approaching. If we're approaching with faith, then gradually our love awakens for the Lord. In this age of Kali, according to our scriptures, the supreme deity is God's holy name. And this is proclaimed and glorified in all great scriptures. The name of God is holy. And there are many names of God, but there are also many names that are not God. We must understand through Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, through the great saints of history, through the scriptures, and through the Guru who today is representing the saints in the scriptures. From them we get an authorized understanding of how to actually connect our consciousness to God's name. And through that connection, it purifies, it cleanses our heart and awakens not only peace, but beyond peace, love. Peace is neutral. Love is positive and dynamic. It is inclusive of peace. Just like you are going to Xavier College, you said? JJ. KEM. King Edward Memorial. Yes? So you are going to KEM. Why? Why don't you just buy a textbook at the bookstore downtown and become a doctor? Become a heart surgeon and see how many customers you get. We take so serious all the subjects of this world. If you want to be a doctor, not only do you have to study the authorized textbooks, but you also have to be trained by a doctor who has been trained by other doctors, who has been trained by other doctors according to the textbooks. Correct? Only if you go through that whole tradition do you get your degree, and will people have faith that you're actually a doctor. In the West, if somebody doesn't go through that procedure, they're called quacks. You have heard the word quack? Some ducks quack louder than others. But if you don't have that proper training, from the proper books, from the proper tradition, from the proper teachers, who will take you seriously? And that holds true with architecture and engineering. If you're going to help rebuild the World Trade Center as an engineer, they're going to ask, where did you get your education from? What certification do you have? Yes? They're not just going to take anybody off the street who read some books. So any science, whether it's law or medicine or engineering, people want to see that you were trained by the proper teachers, the proper traditions, and the proper books. But when it comes to the most important education, Rajavidya Rajaguyam Pavitramitamuttamam, Bhagavad Gita tells that this knowledge is the king of knowledge. It is the most important of all education. Knowledge of the self. Knowledge of one's eternal nature, one's eternal duty. How to live in this world and become perfect. If we don't have the right scriptures, we don't have the right teachers, we don't have the right parampara or tradition, then we're not going to be getting the same authorized understanding. But today, in the name of religion, anyone who could put on a magic show or has some charisma is considered to be God or guru. Yes? Or even if you have none of that, still you think, I believe. That belief might bring you to a certain state of peace of mind. But if we actually want spiritual realization, and if we actually want to really be able to enlighten people's hearts, then we must at least take our spiritual life as serious as our medical life. Yes? It's not just a matter of what we think. We must actually be educated in the science of spirituality. Is there any other questions? Thank you very much for coming. It's our great honor to have had you.
Hello. Hello. Sir, Hare Krishna. Many times I have completed the... Hello. Many times I have completed resident duties because my duties to...
Yes, it is.
Sorry. Sorry. My complete between my parents, my duties between my parents, my social activities, my professional activities, they are completely between each other. And at times, what shall I do? What is my priorities?
Does anyone else have that problem sometimes? It is a universal problem. The nature of the world is people think it's only me, but everybody is thinking it's only me. Most problems are quite universally applied. What is important is our disposition. If our disposition is strong, is whole, then it will have the power to harmonize apparent contradictions. Actually, faith in truth can harmonize so many apparent contradictions. You can please some people some of the time, but you cannot please all the people all of the time. This was spoken by Abraham Lincoln, I believe. That is a principle of life. What is really important is we must know that we're doing the right thing with the right motives. And then gradually, today or tomorrow, that will harmonize. My profession that I chose, not exactly a profession, but the way of life I chose, was completely foreign to my parents. I don't believe anyone in this room could possibly imagine what a traumatic conflict there was when I became a sadhu. Because everyone in India knows what a sadhu is, whether they like them or not. But in America, nobody ever heard of a sadhu. At least not in 1970. When I came home from India, I came on an airplane home, and my father said, "Where's your baggage?" I said, "Let me help me carry your baggage. Should we go to baggage claim?" And I just handed him my begging bowl. I said, "This is the only baggage I have." It was this metal can with a handle on it. He looked at it. Begging bowl? After all the years of education, you beg? It was incomprehensible. They were brokenhearted. They were weeping. They were confused. What did we do wrong that our son became like this? An upper middle class Jewish family from a small village in northern Illinois, and their son became a Babaji. They were bewildered. I told them that I worship Krishna. They never heard the word Krishna before. Krishna's God? Everything was totally foreign. And that was my life. Is yours that much contradiction? But I tried. At the beginning, I didn't know what to do. They didn't know what to do, and I didn't know what to do either. I knew what to do to follow my religion, but I didn't know what to do to make some bridge so that they could comprehend, you know, what in the world I was. But after some little maturity of the situation, I just showed kindness and showed respect, showed loving affection, tried to explain. The more I preached philosophy, the more they were bewildered. But the more I just loved them for who they were and what they were, even though I didn't agree, I was a staunch vegetarian, they weren't. They sat and watched television. I was on the porch chanting japa. We didn't have much in common. But there was respect. There was tolerance. There was forgiveness. And after some time, they started chanting japa. They came to India. They have pictures of Krishna all over their house. Their best friends are devotees. They asked me to baptize their grandchildren in the name of Krishna. Their hearts are completely changed. They give my tapes to relatives and friends. Even the tape tonight they might give. They're proud. They're happy. I love them. They love me. We're more united than when I was like them. Unity in diversity. This is a practical example. So just be kind, just be respectful, just be patient. But at the same time, we must follow the ideals that we hold sacred in our heart. That may not answer all the specifics of your particular situation, but if you apply that principle, you may find it very helpful. I personally did. And there was a big gap. There was a gap bigger than all the oceans merged together in this world. But now we live peacefully on the same island, even though I'm in Bombay and they're in Chicago. Because it's a matter of the heart. And sometimes things take a little time. But if we create the right environment, a harmonizing environment, a healing environment, an environment of respect and understanding, we don't have to compromise the ideals that are sacred in our lives if we do it properly. Thank you very much, sir. Could we give microphone?
All of us have grown hearing the slogan that Sara Jahan Se Acha Hindustan Hamara. I would like to hear your comment on this slogan. Once upon a time, I tried to recoin the slogan as Sara Jagat Se Acha Ye Dharti Hamara. But now I feel that there is not much difference between these two slogans. Instead of that, we must say Sara Jagat Se Acha or Ye Sara Jagat Hamara. I would like to hear your comment on this.
Should I give you my subjective or objective reply?
We kindly decide in which way you have to answer.
I will give both. Subjectively, I agree, India is the best. Objectively, my reply is the spirit of what India stands for in its tradition is best. But what India is today is sometimes like that and sometimes not at all. If you say India's best, it depends what you're talking about. Most people think that Hollywood is better than Bollywood. And that Sony is better than what? That devil video? Video kind. So there is, on that level, India may not be the best. But the culture, the scripture, the spiritual substance of India's culture and tradition is so deep, it is so profound, it is so full. In my own subjective research, I found that Vedas are like an encyclopedia. And scriptures of other places are like dictionaries. They say the same thing. But how profoundly deep and exhaustive and philosophical and scientific are the Vedas. The spirituality of India is so deep within the fiber and the substance of the tradition and the society more than anywhere else in the world. One of the greatest authors of world religion, he was, I believe, from Japan. He wrote a book, PhD, on world religions. And in that book, he stated, if you want to understand what truly is religion, you must spend time in India. But what he's talking about, and what I'm talking about, is actually Bharat. Bharat is the spirit of the culture, tradition, and spirituality of the great sages, rishis, and emperors of India. And it is so full, it is so rich. And wherever we are in the world, if we carry that spirit in our heart, that's where we really reside. But if we're living in India, and we're thinking about Disney World, or we're thinking about Hollywood movies, or Michael Jackson, then physically we're Indians. But what is our consciousness? What is our heart? So wherever there is, our Guru Maharaj went to Moscow in the early 1970s. He spoke with an Indologist, PhD professor, wrote many books, Professor Katowski. Here's a PhD scholar training people to become PhDs in an academic institution, Moscow University and the Oriental Studies Division. He said to my Guru Maharaj, he said, Swamiji, at the time of death, everything is finished. Srila Prabhupada explained, What a difference. In India, even the simple field worker on her hands and knees in the paddy field knows that they should be good in this life because it will affect their next life. They don't know how to read or write, but they know if I'm good in this life, it will be of benefit to me in my next life. And here's one of the biggest scholars of an entire nation, and he doesn't even understand that fundamental scientific basic truth. So yes, India has the deepest, the greatest spiritual culture in the world, and I believe I'm somewhat objective, although it's mixed with subjective, because I didn't come to India for this. I traveled through America, through Europe, through the Middle East, because I was looking for something with real spiritual substance. India became my motherland because I found it so much in the people, in the culture here. But unfortunately, so many people are running away from their culture. Our Guru Maharaj said, the Indians are this far from God just by being brought up here in this culture. They're this far from God. But the vast majority of the population is running this way. Prabhupada said, the young people of America and Europe are this far from God. But upon meeting some sadhus, they're running this way. Prabhupada said, if we could just convince the Indians, they only have this far to go. And we see it with these students. Many of these students were probably really chasing after the things of the West. We see it in a city like Mumbai. Dates with girls, popular Western music. I don't even know what it's called anymore. It used to be called rock and roll. It's called rock and roll because your whole mind just rocks and rolls. And then it evolved into punk rock, which means your mind just becomes like a rock. So I see American dress, Western dress, Western technology, Western eating habits, wanting to go to West to make money. Yes? This far, running this way. But somehow or other, if the culture that they were born into is just, if that same thing is just presented philosophically, scientifically, with a clear understanding of the essence and the goal, they become the most enthused, the most committed. Nowhere else in the world could it be like this. So committed. So the parents usually worry about their kids. They're becoming so westernized. But then when they actually want to commit themselves to living according to the moral principles and the spiritual substance of their own religion, then the parents worry even more. Sometimes. Yes? But it's amazing. These young people of India, it's like they're just dry grass. But they're just becoming more and more moistened by other influences. But just a little drop of fire and they just become surcharged. Why? Because they're so close. Because the traditions and culture of this wonderful country of yours has such a deep and solid spiritual foundation. Through the Mughal conquerors, through the British administration, so much plundering, but still, people have such faith, such devotion. When we speak about Mughal conquerors or British, we're not against Islam or Christianity. But their mood of coming here was not compassion and forgiveness. It was conquer and divide. But still, even under foreign control for generations, such a spiritual foundation. But another subjective observation I'd like to share. I've seen more degradation in the sanctity of Indian culture in the few years of satellite TV than I've seen in centuries of other foreign influences. So we have to be very careful. And I'm so grateful and so proud of all of these wonderful young men. And we have a Chaitanya festival with young women. We're not asking them to give up their careers. We're not asking them to give up their families. We're just asking them to make devotion and love for God and compassion to all living beings the priority of their lives and apply that principle to whatever they do, whether they're doctors or lawyers or engineers or businessmen or teachers or housewives. And we see so much enthusiasm, so much sincerity, so much commitment. It's wonderful. The youth is the future of the world. The youth of our great nation is really going down a drain morally. We need people, young people, to really, with enthusiasm, with all of their young, energetic potencies, which we don't have much anymore, for them to really feel the necessity of morality, character, on the foundation of love of God, what they can do for the world, how they can influence their comrades. It is so important. Our Guru Maharaj was one Indian. He used to say, he was one Indian who went to America. Just one. And people who were addicted to eating meat, intoxication, gambling, illicit sex, and atheism became saints by the tens and thousands because he shared the great wealth of India's culture and transformed people's lives. What to speak if these young people hold the sacred ideals of the great forefathers of our rishis and acharyas holy in their own hearts? What they could do to protect and transform the sanctity of India and the world? Srila Prabhupada explained, India is like layman. There's so much poverty. But good vision. America's strong man. But blind spiritually. But if the layman gets on the shoulders of the strong blind man, they could do great things together. But on their own, they can't do so much. So yes, America's educational systems, technology, science, when I say America, I mean the West. If it's harmonized with India's spiritual cultural vision based on guru, sadhu, and shastra, not just based on the superstitious rituals of, you know, putting blood on your baby's head to protect it from Saturn or something like that. I'm talking about, of course, there is a science to that too. But today, so much superstition. But actual scientific understanding of parampara, what the rishis, sages have given us. If they could harmonize that devotion with the gifts of the West, what we could do for India and for the world. I hope that answers your question.
I would like to ask one last question. According to the view of the common man, the entire universe is created by God, or rather the entire universe itself is God. Then why so much of misery is existing? Why there are natural calamities? Why there are carnivorous animals eating the flesh of harmless animals? Or is that in some part of the universe there will be an ideal world where one man does not kill another man, an animal does not eat the flesh of other animals, and there are no wars? There can be ideal worlds in any part of the world. Is this earth is that part of the world? Why so much of misery is existing? Earth work is happening. These type of miseries are there. So I would like to hear from you some thoughts on this.
I will be very brief because we're running out of time. The Creator has given us all facilities to create a spiritual paradise. But the Creator has also given us free will. Because without free will, there can be no real love. Yes? Love has to be an expression of our independent wish. You can put a gun to your son's head and tell him, do what I say, and he'll probably do it. But he won't love you. For there to be love, he must have the freedom to obey or disobey. To do what you want or not to do what you want. As they grow up, they have their free will. And that's an expression of their love. So God has created everything perfectly. And God has descended into this world personally to teach us the way to live. And He's giving us scriptures, which is like the operation manual of how to live in this world. And He sent His sons and His prophets and His gurus and His representatives to show us by their example in life. He's given us everything. But if man disobeys, exploits, causes cruelty to other men, then he implicates himself or herself in the laws of karma. And all the catastrophes and calamities are either individual or collective karmic reactions. Killing has karma. There's debate whether abortion is right or wrong. But according to God's laws, it's killing. Man could make whatever laws he wants. But karmic laws are not adjustable by man's constitutional amendments. The laws of karma are there. the slaughter of millions and millions of cows and other animals every year, there's a karmic reaction for every bit of pain and death for every animal. And it's in the atmosphere. Drilling oil for selfish, greedy purposes. God has created atoms to divide them in certain ways, to create bombs, to destroy people, to take the natural ingredients of the earth, to create anthrax and other types of gases to cause pain. That's not what God put those natural minerals in the earth for. God has created the laws of marriage so that there's sanctity and there's respect amongst human beings. But if we just throw those laws out and just go at each other like animals, there's karma. Yes? God has created healing herbs and we make them into alcoholic beverages. Yes? God has given us land, alcoholic beverages. 80% of the deaths in the from automobile crashes in America are due to intoxication. Drinking while under the influence of alcohol kills. It makes people crazy. It's coming from grains. You could feed a family. With the fertile land in America, with the amount of acres that they grow tobacco, they could probably feed a major portion of India. If they grew nutritious grains with the land, with the millions of acres or hundreds and thousands, I don't know, all the gigantic acreages for tobacco, they could feed most of the poor people. Grow wheat, grow rice. What good is tobacco? It kills. It's on every package of cigarettes in the world. This is going to kill you, isn't it? So they're taking God's fertile land and God's fertile seeds, and instead of doing something for the welfare and the nourishment, they're doing it to kill. And there's karma. Whether the law is permitted or not, there's karma. And that's what these catastrophes are about. When all this bad collective karma is just breeding in the environment, the earth starts exploding. All these toxics start coming out in the form of plagues and wars. It's just the outlet of just social toxins created by our karmic lifestyle. That's not what God created. That's what mankind has created. But still, the Lord is so kind. The sages are so kind. They're willing to forgive. With open arms. Come home, my son. Come home, my daughter. Anytime we just decide to make that move to our mother and father, they're waiting for us. That is how merciful the Creator is. I thank you very much. Hare Krishna.